I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. This is one half of that podcast. Senior writer for Last Week Tonight, author of How to Five Presidents, friend to many, I really, really fell off the rails immediately with this one. It occurred to me in the middle of the intro that we're recording this on St. Patrick's Day, and I really blindly tried to leap into an Irish accent in the middle of this thing, and I couldn't pull it off, and I never quite recovered. I'm still spiraling right now. Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bui. Soren Slancha.
Hello there, Daniel. It's great to be jumping off this bridge with you into our Irish accents.
It's crazy how nuts I went just now. Because I normally write these intros down, even if the intro is as simple and basic as my name and where I work and your name and where you work. I didn't have it written down in front of me, and I started off thinking like, this is okay, you've spoken before, you've had unscripted conversations, that's how most of your conversations go. But I really, really lost it without any kind of safety net. Why would I launch into an accent, Soren?
I don't know. Top of the morning to you. Top. You know what? It's actually really freeing to do an Irish accent because there's a lot of accents you shouldn't be doing anymore.
Yeah, that's correct.
But a name like Daniel O'Brien, I've got kids named Ronan and Gillian. I feel fine about this.
Yeah. We can still do Irish accents for a while. I think we've got maybe 2 years left for Italian accents, and then people are gonna be upset about that.
Right. That so, like, shelf life.
get your licks in while you can, everybody.
There was briefly a time, I think, when everyone, or not everyone, some people tried to come down hard on the Swedish chef from the Muppets.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, let's give this a fucking rest. Like, all we're doing is making fun of Swedish people. And I love that everyone's response to that was like, just stare them in the face and be like, "To film, to call, to flip, to flip, to flip." Like, who gives a shit, man?
Yeah,
even give us Scandinavia.
Even Swedish people were like, oh, "We don't mind it, actually."
give us Scandinavia. Give us some funny accent, please.
I think our old boss, Jack, not to throw him under the bus, but that's what I'm going to do. He really took great pleasure in mocking Italians. I don't know why.
I didn't know if anybody else remembered that. Like, when we were writing the book,
yeah,
he was like, he won like a runner through the book.
Yeah.
Where we made up like a whole mythos around Italians. Like, we made up stereotypes.
Yeah. I think I let him know one time that I'm part Italian. I was never offended by anything that he did.
Well, no.
But I wanted him to be aware, and it did not deter him at all.
Yeah, there were two nationalities. Yeah. One was Italian. He wanted us to like talk about how short Italians were, and we're like, I don't think that's a thing, Jack. Italians are short. And then he was adamant that Australians were racist.
Yeah. He met one Australian person in his life who was racist, and he used that to inform the entire continent.
Weird how that pine kettle situation worked out.
Thanks to our new sponsor alert. Thanks to our new sponsor, Maeve, for supporting our podcast. Dogs,
need unprocessed, high-protein, low-carb diets that kibble and fresh foods don't deliver. Make the switch to Raw today. Right now, Mave is offering $40 off your first order at meetmave.com/QQ.
I actually really enjoyed it. I loved when it, like, there would be a pitch, and I knew that there was going to be, like, even if the pitch wasn't ready from the forums, but there was, like, some Italian aspect to it. I was like, I'm bringing it to the meeting because I just want to hear Jack rant. I think he thought that they were so benign, like that there was like nothing to the, and so he was like, well, let's spice things up. Like, let's stir the pot a little.
Yeah. It's so charming to think about and look back on it, because it's not just, he wasn't like fired up, angry at Italian people or anything like that. He was so happy. The look on his face when he knew that he could make fun of Italians. A kid in a fucking candy store.
Yeah. I appreciate that you tried the accent.
Yeah.
It made me happy when you did it. And happy St. Patrick's Day to you. This is, I want to say, your people's holiday.
Sure. Yeah. It's, someone asked me today, a friend of mine texted me, happy St. Patrick's Day. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess it is. And she asked, did the O'Briens do anything for it? I was like, oh, absolutely not. I don't know if people think, it never occurred to me to do anything for St. Patrick's Day. And I don't know if anyone thinks like this is a very important holiday for Irish American families that we get together and do anything for it.
It's fucking eat soda bread and cabin.
It's not like a solemn or important day for Irish American families, as far as I know. There's like, it feels like one of the just pure drinking holidays, and we're not gonna like hang out as a family and get shit faced and eat cabbage together.
Yeah, this is not the Irish analog to Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
the only thing I think everyone does on this holiday, and it's like, I think everybody assumes that they're Irish on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, being Irish actually means nothing on the holiday.
Right. I as a kid, I was very excited because I would wear a green bow tie to school. That was thrilling. Cute. To me to dress up for St. Patrick's Day and have an old man bow tie thing going on.
Hey, that reminds me. I have a really quick question for you.
Well, this isn't the time or the place, sorry.
Did your parents institute a dress code for you for school?
What do you mean?
Well, I'll tell you that when I was a child, I was not allowed to wear shorts or a t-shirt to school.
Oh.
That would have been, like, I would have been in serious trouble if I had worn a t-shirt to school. I had to wear collar shirts. So in the spring and fall, when it was still a little warm, I would wear polos. And then throughout the rest of the winter, I'd wear a button-up. And then you had to wear jeans. There was no sweatpants. There was no shorts.
Yeah.
You had to wear jeans to school. And so you had to look nice. Now, here, the other thing I will tell you is that growing up, my dad never once wore his collar down on anything. If he had a collar, it was popped. So until I was about 9 or 10, I didn't know you were supposed to put a collar down. Like all of my class photos and everything from up until maybe even like until I was like 10, I've got a pop collar.
Wow. That's, here I was thinking popped collars were invented in like 2002. It felt like a thing I just started suddenly seeing assholes do. And I was like, get out of here. Knock it off. No. We don't need to invent new stuff.
Throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s, my dad was holding strong with a popped collar on everything he wore.
We didn't have a family instituted dress code or anything like that. I don't think that I ever wore sweatpants to school, but I don't know if that was like an official policy. The closest thing I can remember is my mom telling me specifically that I was wearing my Stone Cold Steve Austin jersey too often and that I needed to sort of police myself and not wear it as much. A thing that I was like completely aware of too. She was like, you can't wear it multiple times in a week. And I'm like, but I just love Steve Austin. Please.
What does that even look like? Because Steve Austin famously wears no shirt. So like, what is Steve Austin jersey?
It was just like a black and blue jersey with a bunch of like a collage of Stone Cold's face all over it.
Oh my God. That's incredible. That and a bow tie, a little green bow tie.
Yeah.
I was when I got, I can remember being in second grade. So I was seven and starting to break the rule. And the way that I would do it is I'd wear a button up over the top. I'd wear my OP or my Gotcha t-shirt underneath. And then while I was at school, I'd shed that outside layer, even if, like the middle of winter, just to have a t-shirt on in school felt very cool and very rebellious.
Yeah. Ooh. That, do you have rules for Ronan?
None. Hmm. He wear whatever he wants. I put him in sleeveless shirts sometimes.
That, I think, was off limits for us. I remember seeing kids in sleeveless shirts and being jealous about that because I knew I couldn't, it could never be me.
Yeah. I mean, Gilly has to wear a dress.
Sure.
Every day.
You never had a school uniform, right?
Never. Never once.
I did in kindergarten. Wore clip-on ties and button-down shirts. And
whoa, that's cruel. Wait, they put the, not even just like polos, they put the kids in ties too?
Oh yeah, yeah, 100%. Catholic school, man.
What, did the girls have to wear ties?
No. Sexist. Full nun outfits.
Well, yeah, so my brother's kids have had to go through some schools where they had to have uniforms. And it just seems like such a headache to me. I mean, as much as nice as it is that you don't have to fight with your kids over clothes in the morning, making sure that you have enough clean versions of that outfit seems so...
Yeah, it seems logistically puzzling, especially for the amount of... just the sheer volume of shit I was constantly spilling on myself.
Yeah, of course. You're a kid. You shouldn't feel bad about that. That's... my children come home and they look like they fell through a chimney. Like, I'm like, where did you even get all this charcoal all over you?
Yeah, I would always just trudge home, my shoes caked in mud and like weird brown stains on my shirt. My mom's like, where were you? Like, I don't know.
Where did this come from? Well, all I remember was PE today. Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are generally the stories I get from my children. Oh, well, not Gilly really, but... from Ronan is like, he comes home like covered in the weirdest stuff. And I'm like, we're in his pockets. Like the insides of his pockets are lined with like a jelly. And I'm like, what is this? And he's like, I don't know, man.
Wasp flies out of his hair. Oh yeah, I guess I was in the woods today. That's right.
What woods? There are no woods here. You had to go like 30 miles to get to the woods. I got lost, Dad.
Speaking of spilling stuff on myself, I choked on a massive gulp of water earlier and like couldn't keep it down. Just like, just really gasped all this water. It's always so humbling and terrifying when you lose complete control of your body. I was just like spitting up water all over my couch. Like, oh no, get back in there.
That's a, yeah, that would be a humiliating way to drown on your couch. Humiliating way to die.
Yeah.
You know, I that feeling of like losing total control is, it's really very humbling. It's like that this body doesn't totally belong to you.
Yeah.
You're just
tripping on something and falling and just being like, oh no.
Dan, I wanted to ask you about something else.
Cool.
You recently won another prestigious award, which they just seem to be racking up for you at this point.
Oh, thanks, man. We won the Writers Guild Awards. Yeah, yeah. That's it's just for writers. It's very...
You won a Guildy.
We won a Guildy, yeah. It was... We lost the last 2 years in a row, and we expected to lose again, and we didn't, which is fun. there's also like the night is it's very wild to me because again it's you're hoping to win a trophy you get as a result of doing the job that you're paid very well to do, and you're an adult the whole time, so it's there's always like a little bit of silliness behind it, but it's also like it's our union, so it's all writers and we're amongst our peers and that's kind of fun, and winning feels better than not winning. It's a very long ceremony, and I really want to hit this point over and over again. It's all writers who are not people who should talk. Ever. And it's not like it's not like the Emmys where like every once in a while I'll be like, oh, thank God it's someone from Succession. Good. Let the beautiful, fancy person talk for a while. No, there's none of that. There's none of that to break it up. It's just, all right, now these people, they wrote for radio. All right, now we're going to let them do some public speaking for a while. Okay. How about that? This next person wrote documentaries. I'm like, oh, brother. Someone sing a song, please.
Now, I've never been to an award show that wasn't designed to be filmed.
Yeah.
Do they have cameras at the WGAs, or are they just like, ah, oh, fuck it?
I think they have cameras. I don't know. I imagine it has to be streamed somewhere. I couldn't find it. Like, my family couldn't watch it or anything like that, but
I've never once seen it. I did look for it, yeah. And it does not exist.
We had another very humbling moment, because like as writers, we're sort of expected to be black sheep everywhere and an afterthought, because no one cares about writers as like,
yeah,
like an industry rule. But we have a red carpet for the WGAs, and we have a specific time that last week's night was going to go to the red carpet and get our picture taken. That's how it works. Like 6:50, everyone meet here and we'll get our picture taken. And as we're shuffling into this room full of photographers who are there to take pictures, we could see one of them point his camera at the wall, just like completely turn away from us and start looking at the more interesting wall. And it's like,
well, that
you must have known writers were going to be here. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Please take our picture. And I on the one hand, I was thinking like, this is our birthday. Just like, it's all writers all day. You just have to accept that. You're not going to find anyone more interesting. And then lo and behold, as soon as we leave the red carpet, the person who takes our place is Steven Spielberg. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, that's right. Don't waste any film on us. I get it.
Yeah. Did you happen to see any famous writers? Like, was Jesse Armstrong there? Did you get to go chat it up with him again?
I did not see him. I talked to F. Murray Abraham for a while. Which is like,
yeah, wait, he's not a writer, is he?
I know. He was just there to present something. And he's like, absolutely, for all the, you know, Steven Spielberg is there, Spike Lee is there, Donald Glover was there, lots of, plenty of famous people were around mingling. And I was like, F. Murray Abraham. Like, that is exactly,
for anyone who doesn't know who that is, you know him most recently from the second season of White Lotus. He's the farter.
Yeah, yeah. He was famously Salieri and Amadeus, and he's great. He was in Grand Budapest Hotel. He's been in a lot of things for a very long time. I really like his work, and I was like genuinely starstruck to see this 78-year-old man. I was like, F. Murray Abraham, congratulations. I'm an admirer of your work. And he was mentioning the ballroom. It was the Edison Ballroom. And he's like, did this used to be the Edison Theater? And I said, yes. I didn't know, but I was like, yes, of course it is, F. Murray Abraham. It's whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, I mean, just whatever keeps this conversation going.
It did used to be a theater, sir, and together we can make it one again. You and I, let's do it.
Was he, I'm just like expecting him to be horned up and like talking to you about the girls that go by, but that's only because of the very last character I've seen him play.
No, he just seems like a very gracious and sweet old man who seems genuinely surprised that anyone is still very excited to see him. He seems really taken with the fact that he continues to be a famous man that that people cheer for.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
It makes me think maybe I'll get famous and then become an old man. I mean, yeah. One of those things I know I can do.
It must be like, it's got to be fascinating to be someone like him who has been a working actor for a very long time. And now between, he did a season of a Marvel show, he did Moon Knight and White Lotus. Now he is like very known to a much younger and more enthusiastic fan base. And it seems like a strange shift to like be in your 70s and suddenly have crowds of teens screaming for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that would be true of all actors. As soon as you do a new movie, you've got like this whole new demographic of fans.
Yeah.
That must be very surreal. That, God, I didn't even think about that. That's not something you ever deal with as a writer. Yeah. But like you, all of a sudden you've got like you've got this new group of people who are like, yeah, this guy all the way. This is my new jam. You're yeah. like, oh, you're young enough to be my grandchild.
Yeah. I will say easily the greatest part of the WGA is, and I'm not going to use this, it's like a decently famous person, but a newly famous person that I won't name here, who was presenting an award, and he was so drunk. And
oh, yes,
it ruled. And like one of the things about the WGAs is a lot of these shows have really large writing staffs. Like there's 13 writers on Last Week Tonight. There's like 20 something on Colbert. And you read every single name of every single person. And I'm telling you, you will never find a crowd that was more on the same page than the entire audience watching this very famous, very drunk person really do his best getting through, like, no exaggeration, 75 names all told. He's just, and, you know, they're not always, you know, it's not, you're not getting John Smith over and over again. There's names from all over the world, and you're watching this guy, and like, we can see the list of names too. So we know what's in his future. Yeah. And you're watching him and like, okay, well, thank goodness he's got Bill Hader is in this list. That name's a gimme. And then he goes, Bill Harder. I'm like, oh fuck, man, that was the softball, and he blew it on the softball. The rest of this list doesn't stand a chance. And we were just so pumped for him every time he finished like a show's list of names. We were losing our minds for this guy, and you could tell he was smiling and like happy that we were cheering him on, not very sure why we were doing it. And we were all just like, you've got this, man. You got fucking barrel through. You could do this. I'm looking ahead. There's only 25 names left, man. This is the home stretch. You got it. And we really gave him a huge applause when he finished all those names. It was awesome.
Man, I would love a compilation of announcers presenters at award shows that are clearly on something.
Yeah.
Because there's tons. I mean, there's tons of examples, and they're always fun. I'm riveted by them. There's one from like Mel Gibson when he was just started his career, where he's so coked up and like at the Oscars. And it's fascinating.
Did you know that a dog eating kibble every single day is like a human consuming a diet of 100% processed foods? No matter your species, fillers, additives, and synthetics are not optimal sources of nutrition. Enter Mave Raw Food for Dogs, formulated by a PhD veterinary nutritionist with real human-grade ingredients you can name just by looking. Plus, it's bite-sized and ready for your dog to eat. Right out of the bag, no mess, no prep, just open, pour, and enjoy. If you're like me, you want the best for your dog. I realized years ago that a straight diet of kibble was not right for my dog, Jackson, so I'm always varying it up with his normal kibble, plus sometimes rice, sometimes chicken that is boiled. It's a whole hassle, but it's for my son, and I love him. Maybe you feed your dog kibble recommended by a vet or fresh food diet, but did you know that these are often low in protein, high in carbs, and are the leading cause of weight, mobility, dental, and skin conditions? That's where Maeve comes in. Your dog is biologically primed to digest and absorb key nutrients from an unprocessed, low-carb, high-protein raw meat diet. And Maeve's raw food diet is formulated to meet your dog's needs. I'm going to talk a little bit about Jackson. I've got a bag of this frozen raw Maeve food, and I've added it into his diet, and he just loves it.
It looks like real food that I'm giving him, and smells better than his kibble. And unlike the chicken and rice diet that I fed him before, I don't have to cook anything. I open the freezer, the bags in the freezer. I pour a little bit of it out into his bowl, and he loves the frozen, guys. I'm telling you, he loves the added crunch of having frozen food. He really is excited about his food. I am excited that he's excited, and it seems like, knock on wood, it's been good for his stomach, which has had some issues in the past, and we're very happy with Maeve, and they've got a partner in life from me and from Jackson. Maeve supports benefits you can smell, feel, and see, from better breath and reduced itching and shedding to regular bowel movements and maintaining a healthy weight. Plus, there's no mess, no prep, no thawing. Just open, pour, and serve. It's that easy. Who else can say they get to eat all their favorite foods every single day? Just my dog, Jackson, and he says it with English words. Make the switch to Raw today, right now! Maeve is offering $40 off your first order at meetmaeve.com/QQ. Go to meetmaeve.com/QQ. That's MEETMAEV to receive $40 off your first order. Make your dog as happy and healthy and wise as Jackson with Maeve. Man, there's one celebrity that I'm thinking of, but I can't remember who it was. Ah, damn it, I wish I knew that. It's like a story of not John Hamm, but someone at that level. And a friend of ours used to work with like talent representation and was, let's just say it's John Hamm, even though it's not.
Yeah.
Was briefed before a presser. It was like, here's the thing you need to know about John at these press junkets. He is so shy. He really gets so nervous being on camera and talking to reporters. And so he's very drunk and he's going to be drunk the whole time. It's like, oh, that must be nice to have like a handler who ahead of every one of your visits is just like, hey, just heads up. He's very drunk. Don't talk about it. Leave him alone. It's fine.
I know who it is.
Who is it?
What?
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's who it is. That's awesome.
Are we allowed to say that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I waited till you were done talking so that we have like a clean cut for it. But who told us that? I can't even remember.
I think it was.
Oh man, we may have to pull that.
Yeah, certainly we'll bleep full name too, I think.
Well, that's very exciting. Did you get to wear a tux?
No, I wore a suit. I think they're, man, what was the stupid dress code that they said? I think it was like holiday cocktail, they said. Something
oh,
fun.
Fuck you.
Yeah, I wore a suit. The most exciting thing, which is very on brand for a boring award show celebrating writers that no one cares about, is our trophies were mislabeled. So now it says that I won for writing for Last Night Tonight, which is not the name of the show. And someone from, like, we all saw it and we all started laughing and taking pictures of it. And someone from the WGA was like, oh my God, I am so sorry. This is embarrassing. Please give us the statues back and we will put new labels on them. And
me and
some of my coworkers were like, absolutely not. We're going to keep this forever. And they're like, yeah, but it's embarrassing for us. I was like, that's, I don't know who you are. That's fine for me.
Good. Yeah. Like then it won't happen in the future. That's fucking wild. I think it feels very slapdick.
Yeah. And now we have, it's like a collector's item.
Right. Yeah. You got an air card. That's very cool. Well, congratulations on your award, Dan.
Thanks, man. It's a fun
congratulations
night.
On a long, terrible ceremony. Were there at least after parties that were fun?
Yeah, there was an after party. And I, as soon as I got there, beelined to where a giant bowl of French fries was at the last time they had an after party here. And I went to go find the fries again, but there were no fries this time. And
was
like
it a COVID thing?
Huh?
COVID
no,
thing?
No, they just had like fried shrimp and other stuff. But like you could see my entire staff confused as soon as I get off the elevator and bank a hard right away from the bar straight to where my total victory was supposed to be.
That must have been such a nice moment the first time you discovered that. Like, remember, yeah. Like seminal almost, like where yeah. you're like at an award show, you're not feeling very comfortable. And then you walk to this table that it just has a glorious giant bowl of fries yeah. for you. I went to a wedding once that was in Oregon, and it was at an orchard. So I should have known, but I was kind of like, you know, you do the ceremony and the ceremony is always kind of, there's a lot of just sitting through it and you're not feeling very good in your suit or anything yet. Nobody's really drinking or anything. Yeah. And so after the ceremony, I kind of wandered around, and as I was wandering, stumbled onto this meadow where there was a big spool used as a table and all of these, this ripe fruit all over it, just like overfloweth with ripe fruit. And I was like looking around and there was no one around. It was all just for me. And to this day, like sometimes when I'm going to bed at night, if I'm like having some negative thoughts, I'll be like, no, sorry, go back to the wedding. Go back. Just like remember how perfect that was, that you got to eat as many peaches as you want and then shit all night.
I've been eating so much frozen berries lately.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want to investigate if that's bad for me or not, the sheer amount. But like, I had a bag of frozen berries in my freezer. A strange impulse by weeks ago. I was like, maybe I'll be the kind of person who makes smoothies at some point. You know, sometimes when you're shopping, you're so hungry that you completely lose your mind and you shop for a person that you might one day be. That's what I was doing. I still have not made any smoothies with those berries, but like, first thing in the morning, just grabbing like a tiny handful of frozen berries, like a little woodland creature. It's awesome.
The texture is completely wrong though on frozen berries. I mean, part of the joy of a fruit is that it bursts in your mouth and you get that juice. When you eat a frozen berry, it's like there's like ice inside of it.
Yeah, yeah. I think part of what I'm doing is I'm tricking myself into thinking I'm having an ice pop or like a sweet treat. And that's helpful.
Oh, it's like a bite-sized popsicle piece.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, my mom really tried to get us on frozen grapes as children. And I was like, no, you don't. Come on. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Give me the carob I'm used to.
I used to eat a lot of frozen grapes when I was a bartender. We had some drink that by design required a garnish of 3 frozen grapes. So we just always had them behind the bar. And I went nuts on those things.
What do you, I just don't find them enjoyable at all. I find it very off-putting to bite into something because it's kind of like, it's like a squeaky fruit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah. It sometimes can be very unpleasant.
Oh, okay. Those things that you went ham on are occasionally deeply unsettling when you ate them. Okay. Well, Dan,
I think I'm just like as someone who famously only drinks coffee and water and sometimes seltzer, and I don't snack during the day, and I'm trying to, in general, eat better and be a healthier person. I'm really confronted with the boring realities of my like available food options, and so
it does
like,
shut a lot of doors for you, doesn't it?
Realizing that I can have frozen berries for breakfast is thrilling for me.
There was definitely a period of my life where I just, you know, for like fiscal reasons, like I couldn't just eat anything that I wanted. Yeah. And so it was really like keeping me in line. It was like, if I was going to buy something, well, it better be something that's good for me as well. I just empty calorie tree food is like a silly waste.
Yeah.
And then as I got older and was able to just like eat whatever I wanted, I started to do that. And then, you know, within like a year, you're like, oh shit, I can't do this. This isn't a healthy lifestyle. And then you just start shutting doors. Like you just like, okay, well, let's see what this one. Oh, burgers. No, we don't do that anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
That's shut. Milkshakes. Oh, we don't do those anymore. And that's hard. So it is nice when you get to open a new one, even if it's a door to fucking hell where you eat frozen grapes all the time. But if you could trick your brain into thinking it's good, I mean, I've done it with kale. I've done it with, essentially tree bark.
Yeah.
Every lunch I'm like, oh, I can't wait for my kale. But what I really can't wait for is that chicken that I put at the bottom of the kale to surprise myself. That'll be great.
It's kale for lunch. I hate kale. I absolutely hate kale. And that's one of those, like, there's a lot of things I hate that I still eat because they're good for me. And kale, I'm just like, absolutely not. No, I'm not, like, that won't be the thing that adds 5 years onto my life. And I have to draw a line somewhere. It's bad enough that I eat a salad for lunch every goddamn day. It's going to be spinach, and kale is just going to be for someone else.
Well, yeah, so spinach is like a great, spinach tastes better, certainly. But spinach is a, it's so, I would have to eat so many pounds of spinach to feel full. Like, spinach just disintegrates inside of you. It's like, if you've ever seen like a raccoon with cotton candy, and it's like trying to wash it in the water and it just like disappears. And the raccoon's like, no. Like, that's how I feel about spinach. At kale, it is terrible. I agree with you, but it just sort of like piles up in your stomach very easily, so that when you're done eating a giant pile of kale, you're like, hey, I'm genuinely full.
Man, that sucks. I guess I'm never full after lunch, but I also have agreed that that's fine. And that's the point. And I'm not supposed to enjoy making my salad or eating it, and I'm not supposed to feel good afterwards. And I tick all those boxes.
Okay. Well, there you go. Dan, I wanted to talk to you about, well, two other things. One is that since we were already on the subject of celebrities and writing, I watched a movie the other day, and you'd be happy to know it's fairly recent. It was Creed.
Creed 3?
2.
Oh, buddy.
Would it also surprise you to know that I got confused and thought that I was watching the most recent Creed?
Well, what did you think? Let me see if I can remember how to talk about this movie. That's Drago? Drago's kid?
That's right. Everybody's kid. Everybody's kid is in it. And everybody's kid has the same job as the parent. That's like the whole premise of the movie is that both Drago has a son who's going to be a boxer. Apollo has a son who's now there's those two are going to fight. And then also the trainers, his new trainer, because Rocky won't train him for this fight. Rocky doesn't think he can do it. Right. And so Michael B. Jordan goes to the trainer of the son who was, how did this work? In the original Rocky movies, he was a trainer that wouldn't train Rocky. It's very convoluted, but everybody, it's just Muppet Babies. Like, everybody has the same job as the adults did in the 80s movies.
It's very funny. You'd have to do some very serious parental brainwashing to train your child from birth to beat up the son of someone you have a tenuous connection to.
Well, super weird, like, in that it's like you have to go beat up the son of the man that I killed to redeem our name.
Yeah.
If you kill him, that's fine. We just have to redeem the name.
I'm so mad that Rocky beat me 40 years ago. Dad, why don't you just kill him? That seems easier.
No, you have to kill this other guy's son who I killed. That's the only way. It's a strange movie. You know, Tessa Thompson's in it, so she's singing, and there's a sex scene, and it's just really great things. You know what I'm saying?
Let's cool it, man. Let's take it easy, sword.
Do you know Tessa Thompson?
I saw Creed 3 and it was great.
Oh, good. Hey, did Aaron Covington write all these?
Yes.
That's great. Good for him.
Yeah. And I also saw
friend of crack, Aaron Covington.
Yeah. We used to do stand up with him, I think, too. I saw the new Scream movie also. I will see as many Screams as they want to make. I will keep seeing them.
Well, you know what
I
said
when I saw Creed 3? The timing worked out for me because I wanted to see like a mid-afternoon movie. And the only available Creed 3 was in IMAX, which is a format that I never take myself to. And now I think I want to see every movie at IMAX because it's just so much bigger and louder. And I didn't know it was going to have, because I don't think that movie was like filmed for IMAX or anything. So I didn't think there would be a noticeable difference. There super is. It's just a better way to watch movies.
Okay. I don't even know where an IMAX is around me.
Oh.
I assumed they all closed during the pandemic. I'm probably wrong about that. Oh. I'll find one. I'll find one and I'll go see it when they show Creed 3 in like in loving memory, like for nostalgia's sake in 2046. I will go see Creed 3 and then we can talk about it. Oh shit, Victor Drago is in Creed 3.
Yeah, yeah. The
son.
Yeah, the son shows up. He's not angry anymore. He's given up that whole vendetta. He's just like a boxer who's still hanging around.
Yeah, they did. I was surprised that they gave him some pathos in this one, because in Rocky IV, we never liked the Russians. There was nothing redeemable in that entire movie about them. But they gave the Victor Drago Jr., they gave him some real pathos. It was nice. There's another thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Dan.
Fine. I mean, we're here.
I don't need to talk about Creed 2. Nobody wants to hear me talk about Creed 2. The only fun part of that story is that I thought I was watching the most recent Creed.
How did you think you were watching the most recent Creed? You must have been watching Creed 2 at your home.
Yeah, no, of course. And I thought, you know, because everything jumps onto streaming so quickly, I thought, oh, great. It's already out. And I didn't realize that I had missed an entire Creed. I thought there was Creed 1, and then there's the most recent one.
That is so funny.
Do you remember, you and I used to go to a gym called Burn Fitness that was in Santa Monica. In retrospect, maybe one of the best gyms I ever belonged to. There was nobody ever there. It was like beautiful wood floors. And
it was always very clean. It was right by our office. I never before or since have I made so many friends at a gym than I did at Burn. Like, we would see each other socially, not just at the gym, just like gym friends that you made there. Staff and other people there were just like, oh, I'm excited to see that douchebag Keith. let's see what that asshole's up to.
You know, in normal friendships.
Yeah.
I agree with you. We were all there. It was weird in that we were all like the same age and we all had similar interests and we all just became really good friends at this gym. Well, there was a guy, I don't know if you remember him. He would show up there and he was yoked, but he was older than us. He was really, really strong. And he carried around his jacket and his bag, refused to put them in a locker, which was suspicious of maybe steroids, but he carried that stuff around and he honored me by making me his shoulder guy, which means that like when he was going to be lifting shoulders, he asked for my spot. And that would be the guy that he'd go hunt out and get to do his shoulder spot.
Huh.
And I was so honored by that. And then because, you know, he's huge. I had no business of like trying to help him. But his name was Lee Ryerman. And I figured out while we were at the gym that he was Hawk from American Gladiators.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I was told this story to my pod the other day, our writer's room, and I was so excited to tell them about Lee Ryerman and how he goes to Burn. And somebody said, no, he doesn't. He's dead. And I was like, what? 2016, he died. Oh. My gym buddy died, Dan.
I'm so sorry.
Well, I guess
What do you want me to do?
I want you to do nothing. I'm just telling you.
Okay. All right.
You don't need to solve this problem for me. Just be there for me.
I thought this was, when you first started talking about Burn, I thought for sure you were going to talk about a different older man also named Lee who went to gym.
Oh, shit.
Like, that guy, he is surely dead. But that guy... was an older gentleman who was always kind of shaking. I don't know if there was something
going
wrong
on
with him or what, but he was always shaking. And he also was so taken with you. He was such a, not in like a, romantic way or anything like that.
Jury's out.
I think it really felt like a genuine, like, I don't know if it was, if he felt very paternal towards you or if he was deluding himself into thinking like, ah, yes, we are two peers, me, a million years old, and Soren in his 20s, just a couple of gym rats. You were always very friendly and communicative with him, and he wanted to know your story. He wanted you to have dinner with him. He wanted to, like, hand you things, little gifts and stuff from his shaky fucking hands all the time.
It was a really bizarre. I had completely forgotten about Lee, but yeah, he was this guy at the gym who, if he was going to be there that day, I had to carve out another 20 minutes for my workout so that I could just sit there and talk to Lee for a little while. Cause he like, yeah, he'd come find me. And then he wanted to just chat for a while. And he was the nicest guy in the world and very eager to help me in any way he could.
Yeah.
So yeah, he would go on trips and then bring me back stuff from the trip. He knew someone who knew someone at a studio. And when he found out that I was doing like sketch comedy and stuff at this theater that was basically downstairs, he was like, I'll get you on the lot. I can get you on the lot. And I was like, I don't need to go to the lot. And he was like, shh, nonsense. I will get you on the lot. And I was like, oh, okay.
Nonsense. He puts a finger to your lips to shush you.
And then that finger gently just slides into my mouth. Yeah, Lee, it was never totally clear what he wanted the relationship to be. It was clear that we weren't there for him. Like he was striving towards something new and different that we weren't hadn't achieved yet. But it wasn't clear if it was sexual or not.
I think it was very smart of you to not ever accept any large gifts from him, because romantic or not, there was something in your body that was like, I can't be in debt to this person. I can never owe him.
Right. I don't want Lee calling it a favor. I hope he doesn't listen to this.
Oh no, he's dead.
Jesus. He might be. Anyway, I went through, as we started like going down the rabbit hole of American Gladiators, I also mentioned to them just in passing, they're like, somebody had said that they're like, I watched it. And I was like, do you know Hawk? And they're like, no, I wasn't really paying attention to the guys. And I was like, that's fair. I really had a crush on one of the women, Siren. I thought she was the best. Do you remember Siren at all, Dan?
Nope.
Okay. Well, Siren was deaf. And as a child, I was very taken by that she was this big woman and not letting her deafness get in her way. And that she also had a very pretty face, didn't hurt either. I will tell you, and I'm sure you already know, yes, she was blonde.
Yeah. I don't know what I was expecting when I Googled her. I guess if I'm putting any real thought into this, Siren didn't sound like a white name. That's on me.
Yeah.
Siren's a made up name. But as soon as I saw her, I was like, oh yeah, this is like a 1980s blonde woman. Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. And she has the hair. She's got everything in the 80s could have wanted. She's got it.
Yeah.
And, so I start telling them about that and they're like, oh dude, she's dead. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? So I think she killed herself. All the American Gladiators at this point are like dead. I don't know if maybe it was just steroid use or if that even does it, or if it was just, they all came from troubled places anyway, but in hearing that so many of them were dead, I started thinking back on the show. Did you spend after Saturday Night Live? I don't know if that was during your era or not.
I will not be helpful here. I don't have great memory for American Gladiators. I'm certain it's a show that I watched. I don't know anyone's name.
Okay, well, let me take you back, because I would stay up specifically to watch American Gladiators because I was young enough that I also thought I could take or leave Saturday Night Live. I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. But American Gladiators was going to be on, and I wanted to be in that gym so bad. Everything there looked like the coolest thing in the world. It's an adult playground, and all these mats are like 6 feet thick, and there's also these courses where somebody's shooting tennis balls at you and you're just running and diving. It looked like I wanted like a birthday there so badly.
Yeah.
And just like peripherally, there were also all these really meat-headed giants that were very fun to watch as they would punch a much smaller person who had come on the show as a contestant into the ground. And that was very fun for me to watch as well. But what would happen is if these contestants beat them, they would lose their shit. American Gladiators would get so angry in a genuine way. I mean, they know yeah. they're on television and everything. They know there's cameras on them, but they can't help themselves. They would lose their minds. They would get so upset, and then they'd be interviewed afterwards, which is maybe the best part of American Gladiators, because they would just talk shit about the contestant because they were so angry. They didn't know how to present themselves. They didn't know anything. So they just, if they didn't do it, if they didn't do the thing that they set out to do, or if at one point there was a guy, I'll give you like a brief rundown that you have to get 10 yards with a football past a gladiator, but there's walls on each side. So you only have, you're like trying to get into an end zone from the red zone, but then you also have maybe like 20 feet on each side to work with. And so there's just no way to get past these. It's virtually impossible. One yeah. guy runs directly at the American Gladiator and does a front flip over the American Gladiator. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. You can find this clip on YouTube. Does mm-hmm. a front flip over the American Gladiator and gets into the end zone. And this gladiator, I was like Tower or somebody, he's just went nuts. He was so angry that he had been bested that like then when he gets interviewed, he's just like ripping this guy to shreds. It was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway,
the conceit of that show remains hilarious and beautiful. You're going to get these normal average people and have them compete against just these born athletic giant monsters who pretty consistently dominated them. It's so that you would think they would build something into the show to give the average athletes some kind of advantage, but they don't. They're just like, hey, you're average and this person's better. Let's see which one of you wins. Oh, it was the bigger guy that we paid to beat you? Better luck next time, buddy.
And every single one of them looked like a professional wrestler. Like, they're all juiced yeah. up. So like you could see the steroids coming out, like tearing out of their eyes because yeah. they're so juiced up. And they would just destroy these people. Like it seemed like they genuinely hated the contestants because they yeah. would do what they could to just hurt these people. There was a one with rings where like you had to get past this gladiator by swinging from rings, and the gladiator was also on rings. And you try and like maneuver around and just get your body swinging the right way. And all the gladiator had to do was get close enough to you that they could grab onto you. And then they would hold you. And suddenly you had 400 pounds hanging off of you. But this one guy kept his grip. And so this gladiator's hanging onto his legs and can't get him to fall. And so the gladiator just starts punching the guy.
It really seems like the show is truly like when you and I used to volunteer with children and we would just destroy them in football, basketball, and soccer because we were in our 20s and they were 7 and 8 year old kids. There's no surprise element to it. There's no like, all right, one hand behind my back. It's like, no, we're just going to destroy you because we're superior athletes. And that's all there is to it.
Yeah. Those children would never in any danger of scoring a touchdown against us.
No.
And so it always was really surprising when somebody would beat a gladiator. Everyone in the stadium would go nuts. Like it was crazy. And it was just such a joy to watch the gladiators themselves go nuts, and not in a way where they're like, I can't, yeah, that's really impressive. What you did was really impressive. They're like, no, run it back. Fucking run it back. We're doing it again. Anyway, they're all dead.
Yeah. Shame.
But I got to spot one, and I'll remember that forever.
Yeah.
Those moments that Hawk and I shared. I guess he was an actor too.
Does Burn still exist? It doesn't, right?
I think it does. It moved. It moved further down. It moved over the Adidas store.
Yeah. That place really set a pretty incredible bar as far as gym experiences go that no other gym has come close to.
It's really a shame, yeah, that we got that so early. It's like me growing up in Aspen, where after I left, I was like, oh, shit. That was the spot. Yeah, Burn was just like one of our first gyms. And we're like, I don't know, it's a gym, whatever. And then no gym could have ever held a candle to that. It was really a joy. We're doing a huge sponsorship for Burn right now. I feel like they should be giving us some money.
Yeah, someone should. I'll talk about your fucking spinach brand. Or like, could we get some money from Kirkland Assorted Berries?
Kirkland Signature Berries, Dan. Yeah. Give them their due. Did we get our signature berries?
did we ever get a proposal for a sponsorship for Creed 2? did that come through for us in 2023?
Well, we should just end the show.
Oh man, that's great. The show is called Great.
You're listening to Quick Question. You knew that already. You can follow us and maybe even talk to us. Touch stardom. Touch the face of celebrity. But not literally. You can find Dan at DOB_Inc. on Twitter. You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can follow Quick Question at QQ_Soren and Dan. You can also email us at QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. We have a producer, sound engineer, and editor in Gabe Harder, but currently he's out. So we got the incomparable Jacob Weinstein doing it for us. If you like our theme song, that's by MeRex, and you can find their music at merex.bandcamp.com or, you know, Spotify, wherever you listen to your music. That's it.
Bye.
Bye.
I've got a quick question for you, all right? I want to hear your thoughts, I want to know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, all right? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite? How did you get? If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.